Hello and welcome to another interesting episode of InsurTech Business Series. As usual, we are excited to have you come on and listen to this podcast. It's been an interesting conversation so far. And my name is Damola.
Hi, Damola. My name is Folumi. Hi, everyone.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm okay. I'm good. It's a bit bright today. Thank God the rains are not, you know, pouring yet. So
yeah,
it's good for me. It's a good day for me. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, it's been quite interesting. You know, I mean, generally, mostly working from home. You know, it's been interesting. You know how it all has gone, and I mean, I've been quite busy speaking at Digital Insurance Innovation Conference, and it was quite interesting how that went, with a lot of insights from around the world, really. And kudos to the team that that brought that together. And I mean, we need some more of those conversations, you know, especially in the African front. So yeah.
I was opportune to listen in at some point, and you know, I took a look at some of the papers, and they looked very, very, very interesting. I mean, for those people that missed out, I think there's a way you can reach out to them or something. I don't know how. Damola, I think you should be in the best position for advice. I mean,
what we can do is we'll speak with the organizers. Maybe if it's possible, we can share the recorded
version
so everyone can be a part of it. Yeah, so sure. I mean, once we have that, we can share on our LinkedIn page. So if you're not following us on LinkedIn, so go to LinkedIn and follow us at InsurTech Business Series. And once we have it, we'll share the link there. And you can also follow for other, you know, engagements as well. I mean, we are building a community of InsurTech enthusiasts and innovators, and especially in Nigeria, but also in, you know, encouraged to see a lot more people from other parts of the world, you know, joining the conversation and see how we can, you know, grow the insurance industry in Africa. So yeah, you're welcome. So today we have a very interesting conversation with Dr. Ipeme Neto. He's the founder of Wella Health.
Wella Health,
So Wella Health is a health tech stroke insurtech company, right? So they're providing affordable health with insurance. So it's a very interesting combination, and I'm really looking forward to that conversation.
And I think this is actually a good one, having, you know, partnerships with, you know, health tech businesses and insurance space, even though it's not the core insurance, but the health part of it. So it's a good one to see that people are becoming more interested in partnering with the insurance industry. It's really, really good.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite interesting because, I mean, we are in sort of like in a health crisis around the world right now.
Yes.
So it's going to be interesting to hear from how they are tackling that, how they are operating this time. And also, I mean, someone from outside, you know, coming into the insurance space. So, I mean, it will be interesting to hear his perspective on how they have tackled some things as well.
Some of the challenges they had and the ones they've been able to overcome.
Yeah. All right. So we'll join that conversation after the short break.
Don't go nowhere.
Yeah, so my name is Dr. Neto, welcome.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. How are you doing?
Well, I'm good, thanks. It's always good to get on a podcast, and I really like your podcast. I think it's a niche area, of course, and it's nice to have, you know, people like yourselves and curate some of the content and the interesting people on the subject. So it's really, really, I'm really excited to be on this.
All right, thank you very much. So how's it been with the lockdown and work?
It's been challenging, I have to say. I mean, I think for everybody, it's been a big challenge. For me, I do, you know, I run my business, run my startup, and so I don't really do, you know, direct medical practice. Now, having said that, you know, I am a doctor, and I do a lot of stuff in health innovation, health technology, health management, and so I've actually been involved in, you know, quite a number of things around the COVID-19 response, you know, to help the country, and that's Nigeria, just respond a bit better. So I've been very busy at this time.
Oh, okay. All right. So I mean, you know, tell us a bit about Dr. Ikpemen Netu.
It's always a difficult question to answer. but I guess a good place to start perhaps is around, you know, my motivation to become a doctor. I've been working in medicine for the last 10 years. And I guess, I mean, it's a bit cliched, right? I always wanted to help people. And so right from when I was young, I always had that desire to be in a position where I can help people, you know, especially around, you know, their healthcare challenges, which is a significant thing. I think for me, from what I understand, from when I was young, I had a family member who was unwell, and I said I was going to, you know, eventually, you know, be a doctor to help solve that. So I think that was where that whole thing started from. And so, you know, going on to get into med school, you know, studying to be a doctor, one thing that I realized along the way was that it wasn't just enough for me to, you know, see one patient a day. And we'll talk about this a bit more as to how I, you know, eventually started a startup. But I always wanted to have a really large impact. And I knew that sitting in a clinic, you know, speaking to one patient, you know, every few minutes wasn't going to cut it for me. I really wanted to have a massive impact. And I also saw the challenge of systemic problems, you know. And so when you sit in a hospital or in a clinic, and you're at the end of the problem, you know, it's a bit like the story of the two guys that are by a river, and then they see, you know, a kid in the river screaming, drowning. So they jump in and they save that one kid. And then a few minutes later, there's another kid. And then a few minutes later, there's another kid, you know. And so they keep jumping in to save the kids. But very quickly, they realize there is no point really jumping in to save this kid. They need to go upriver to find out who's throwing the kids in the river.
And so
I think, you know, medicine is there's a lot of similarities, is that a lot of the problems that we solve as doctors actually could be better managed upstream, you know. And so that's why I sort of stepped out from seeing patients individually to finding systemic solutions to the problems we face.
You touched on something that I wanted you to speak a bit about. So to a good extent, yes, you might say it's cliche, people might say it's cliche, but it's that bit is quite important, right? Like that passion has to be there, that drive that, okay, you want to, like you're really moved to want to help people. So, I mean, from your experience, I mean, starting your own business, which we'll get into, because yes, you might have passion, but I mean, to quote this program on CNN, passion to portfolio.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a number of schools of thought around, you know, the importance of passion when you're, say, starting a startup. And I don't think there's a right or wrong per se, but certainly I think it's good to be passionate about what you're working in, because it helps you get through the difficult times. I mean, I became an entrepreneur about 5 years ago, and like the amount of difficulties I've faced is crazy that I'm still at it. And the reason I'm still at it is because, I mean, I'm super passionate about what I'm trying to do or what I'm trying to achieve. So I think that passion gives you some longevity and the ability to have more grit and just stay with it. Now, having said that, passion can also make you foolish, right? You can, instead of calling it quits, you know, you go after the sunk cost fallacy, you know, where you keep, you know, putting in more effort where really there shouldn't be any more thing put in. So I think there's pros and cons. But considering that, you know, new businesses, especially in difficult markets, always take time. And so I think you're better off having passion than not having passion for what you're working on.
Now, I would say the portfolio now, we are moving from the passion. We're sure that you established the Wella Health. But also, how have you been able to manage digitization with, you know, your actual profession? So being a doctor and coming into the you know, into the health tech space, like how are you able to combine those two together? Then that's one. Then also, would also like you to tell us about what Wella Health is about.
I was always interested in technology. I mean, I grew up around a computer. I was very privileged to have internet in my house when I was a teenager. That's unusual in Nigeria. But when I was a teenager, I had internet at home. And so clearly I was very privileged and, you know, had a lot of exposure to technology. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, my brothers are both, you know, into tech. One of my brothers worked in cybersecurity. The other one is a developer. So it was, you know, we're very much around computers all of our lives, and the internet as well. And so I was always comfortable with, you know, technology. And so, again, I would be one of those people, you could call me an early adopter type, you know. So I adopted smartphones in the very early days. You know, I was, you know, tinkering with my phone and, you know, installing things, uninstalling things, you know. So I was always, you know, sort of, you know, tech inclined. I think what when the big light bulb went off in my head was I was working in a hospital in New Zealand, actually, and they had really great technology. The technology was so good that I could do my work from home, right? And so their whole system was virtualized, and so you could log into the hospital computers from anywhere in the world, and you could do virtually everything. You know, that didn't, if you didn't need to see a patient physically, you could do everything else on a computer from anywhere in the world. And so I could prescribe on a computer, I could review notes on a computer, I could write notes on a computer, you know. So it became so easy to do my work. I would go to work in the morning, see the patient, and then I could go home for lunch, and then I really didn't need to go back to work unless it was like an emergency to see somebody. You know, I could do a lot of my work from home. And so it was, I was very fascinated, and I was delighted actually that, you know, this technology thing is actually, you know, quite an amazing way to make healthcare more efficient. And of course, my goal was always to return to Nigeria. And so I started to look back to Nigeria to think and figure out how technology can help. Around that time, I started to help a family member as well with, you know, accessing, you know, healthcare in Nigeria. And I was obviously far away, and so technology played a central role there. And that whole thing just kind of, you know, came together, and I realized that, you know, the way to really get to the millions of people and impact for healthcare is really to embrace technology. And so that started my journey around, you know, building technology for healthcare. And so I come at insurance I come at insurance or insurtech from a very different standpoint, right? So for me, insurance is one of the tools in my arsenal to be able to make healthcare more affordable and more accessible. Mm-hmm. And so the way I think about insurance and insurtech can be slightly different to the way others would think about it because of the way that I, you know, my background and the way that I approach things.
Okay.
And so because when we started out at Wella Health to go into what Wella Health is about, we had nothing to do with insurance. As a matter of fact, if you told me, you know, sort of 3-4 years ago that I would be, you know, an insurtech company, I'd be like, yeah, get out, that's never happening. But it was really following the problem and following and speaking to the users, and that's how we ended up where we were. So with Wella Health, our goal is to solve the challenge of out-of-pocket expenditure for healthcare. So if you look in Nigeria, every year we spend about $7 billion on purchasing healthcare out of our pockets. And the problem with that, of course, is that we are at high risk of getting very impoverished when we have a healthcare expenditure that we can't cover. And so it's fine when you have, you know, a small illness that costs you, you know, 10,000 naira, 5,000 naira. But then when you have a more significant illness, you know, you don't have the savings to cover it, then you're in a really, really big fix. And so we set out to solve that problem of a high out-of-pocket healthcare expenditure. And it was, you know, iterating our way through that and building several technology solutions for healthcare providers that we ended up on, you know, providing micro-insurance that covers common conditions, malaria, of course, being one of them, and then layering on top of that other services that we can then use insurance to solve for people. And also beyond insurance, we also actually provide further benefits that help to solve that underlying problem of out-of-pocket expenditure.
That's interesting. I mean, why malaria? And can you tell us the size of the problem in
Nigeria? Absolutely. So beyond malaria, I think ahead actually on the side there that we do have a cashback plan. Yeah, so it's a traditional hospice cash. So every respectable, you know, microinsurance product or company would have a hospital cash plan. You know, that's just standard. But that hospital cash product has a lot of drawbacks. One of which is low utilization. So your annual risk for hospitalization any year is anywhere between 6 to 10%. You know, that varies on a number of different parameters, but around 6 to 10% annual risk. And now you're looking at a population that are not used to paying for insurance, and you're telling them that they're only ever going to need this insurance about, you know, annual risk of about 6-10%. So it doesn't really compute. People are paying, you know, all this money, and they're really not ever going to see, most people are never going to see any benefit from this hospital cash cover. And so it's clear that what you get is a lot of churn. A lot of people do not actually persist. They may pay for the first few months and then they actually drop off. So let's park that aside for a minute. If you now go back and look at, okay, what do people actually spend their money on for healthcare? Remember I said we spend about $7 billion on out-of-pocket expenditures for healthcare.
Yeah.
Would you believe that $3 billion of that is on malaria?
Wow.
Yes. If you ask people what their most significant and pressing health concern is, 81% of them will tell you it's malaria. And so it's clear that what people are spending their money on is malaria. Now, insurance doesn't like people, you know, that are going to utilize a product too much. If you flip it on its head and say, well, if that's what people, you know, want and need and that's what they're spending their money on, and then you have this other product where only 10% of people are going to use it, you really have to find a way to marry those two things so that you have far better utilization and value for the customer, so that actually your product gets taken up. And so that's why we started off to focus on that malaria side of things. And over time, we've now incorporated this hospitalization side, which also gives that extra benefit, but is also a better product from an insurance point of view because the risk is lower. But at least with malaria, we're able to improve adoption, get people used to the idea, because really a lot of these things is behavior change and getting people used to the idea of prepaying for the services that they need, and also, you know, accessing and understanding how insurance works.
Oh, wow. So preparing for this, I saw that Wella Health has this malaria urine malaria tests that they have their members take up when they call in to say they have symptoms or whatever. Can you tell us about that, or generally just tell us what the journey is, or how it works?
Yes, absolutely. So the cost for our malaria product is only just over $1 a month. And part of the thing that we were looking to solve is beyond just, you know, insurance as a tool, is how can you get healthcare affordable? It was clear that using the existing structures is not sustainable, you know. And so we looked to innovate around how we even deliver this malaria care in the first instance. Okay. So that, you know, you don't have crazy claims ratios at the end of the day, right? Is that if you're going to charge people $1 a month and then providing the care per individual is going to cost you, you know, $10, that's not really sustainable. You know, you're never going to make a business out of that. We had to reduce the cost of providing that care from $10 to something, you know, far more affordable. And so what we did was we actually removed a couple of steps in the process, in that, you know, the traditional way for you to manage malaria is that, you know, you would present to a doctor, for example, and then the doctor would then order a lab test, and then you would then go to a pharmacy to get your drug. So, you know, a lot of costs there for the doctor, the cost for the lab, and then the cost for the pharmacy. What we did was take out the doctor and the lab and condense it into just a 10-minute episode in the pharmacy. And so we work with the pharmacists to train them and give them access to a rapid diagnostic test where they can get a malaria result within 10 minutes, and then you get a drug, and then that interaction is actually done. What we've done as well is we've integrated telemedicine into the offer, so that following that episode, you can actually speak to a doctor if you don't get better. But what, 95% of people get better afterwards, so they don't even need a telemedicine at all. But that service is there and it's available. Now, for people that don't want to, say, go to a pharmacy and get this test done, we then have this urine malaria test, which provides us with, you know, some more flexibility, in that when you sign up and sign on for that, we can send it out to you. And then whenever you have symptoms or you feel unwell, you can just pee into a cup, you do the test, within 20 minutes you get a result, and then you can go and get your drug. So those are some of the things that we've done to innovate around the cost for delivering the care. So, which is why we are just beyond. So people say, "Oh, yeah, an insurtech." I'm like, "Well, we're not that easy to classify because we do a lot of things around the actual healthcare itself."
Okay, it's interesting when you mentioned the tests, and because. I feel some certain way. I know it's malaria. I just go and get drugs. I mean, the tests now, I'm quite curious about how, the tests come in. Because when you talk about tests, Nigerians would think, maybe it's a serious ailment. Now you have a kidney problem or something, you know. So why do I have to take tests to, malaria? I know it's symptoms when I'm feverish.
Yeah, that's a good question. A lot of people ask us that. So the good thing is that COVID-19 has actually opened up people's eyes, right? Because the symptoms for malaria and COVID-19 are not too dissimilar, And so imagine treating yourself for malaria when you actually have COVID-19. That's very foolish. That's what we've been doing, because COVID-19 is far more dangerous and people are more aware. And so if I feel unwell, don't feel quite right, it's probably COVID-19 as well as, malaria. But malaria is not the only cause of a fever. There's several other causes, and it's important to actually test and find out. The Nigerian policy is that 100% of people should get tested before they get treated. It helps for knowing, what your malaria burden is like. Make sure that you're treating people the right way. It reduces your chances of getting resistance to the drugs over time. And also make sure that people get better on time. I'll give you an extreme case. It doesn't happen all the time, but this is possible. I know of somebody that was treating malaria for a very long time, and eventually it turned out that he actually had lung cancer.
Wow.
Right? So, it's obviously that doesn't always happen, but that's a risk, is that if you keep treating for malaria when you never test for it, you could really just be masking an underlying disease that is far more dangerous and that could ultimately even kill you if you don't, if you're not careful.
Well, I've heard what you said. So, in terms of the malaria sample, do you do door-to-door collection for the malaria sample? And where people that get this health insurance are unable to access, the regular health care, how exactly do they, how exactly do you provide all of those telemedicine to them, especially people in rural area?
Yeah, so our target is like you alluded to, is people that are not consuming at all. So I think only about 10% of Nigerians have health insurance. So the market is huge for the people that we can reach. Now, if you break that down further, there's obviously the people in the rural areas. But to be honest, that's not our concern, our focus at the moment, because people in the rural areas are just much harder and far much more expensive to reach. We are a business, and so we have to do things, that make financial sense. At least initially, I think when we get to scale, reaching people that are in the rural areas gets, a bit easier and a bit cheaper. And in fact, we're working with a few NGOs around designing models so that we can reach those people. Because the NGOs that work in this space, their goal is to actually remove their hands. They don't want to exist ultimately. And so they see us as a good vehicle to pass on this this burden for, malaria care and related health challenges too, so that when they help people to come onto our service over time, they can then, transition away so that people have a direct interaction with us and are able to pay for the service themselves. So there's that model that's going on. At the moment, it's really just urban areas. And then over time, as we get to scale, we can look at the people in the rural areas. Regarding testing, so the way our model is that people have to present to a healthcare provider, pharmacies, which is why we have, hundreds of them all across the country.
Okay.
It is not, feasible or financially sensible for us to go out and actually be collecting samples from people.
Yeah.
But that is not the expectation anyway, and that is not the user behavior. People are very comfortable going somewhere. The trick and the key thing is to actually make somewhere that is close to them of sufficient quality to provide the kind of service that they need. And so what we're doing then is getting pharmacies all across the country. We're training them, we're providing them access to consumables, and then we have on our website, you can see hundreds of pharmacies. You go and select which one you want, and then you can go present there and then get really high quality care that we can stand behind.
All right, so I know that like you mentioned in earlier, COVID-19 is hitting us quite hard in the world generally, and Wella Health has been doing some work in that space. Can you tell us a bit about
I mean, what you've been doing with COVID-19, I mean, helping the nation fight the virus and
Yeah, absolutely. So when COVID-19 broke, we realized that there was an opportunity for us to be able to build technology to help the authorities better organize, you know, how they deliver, you know, the response. And so what we did then is we, you know, built some software to help several state governments to keep track of their resources, how they're being utilized, and match the resources to the people that need them. So, for example, if you've got 10 beds in Lagos Island, and then you have 20 people that need those beds, you can then, you know, figure out which are the important 10 people, and then you can then get regular updates on the availability of those beds so you can allocate them appropriately. So that's one thing that we did. We also worked on, you know, using really accessible channels for helping people to, you know what risk they have for COVID-19, and as their risk comes in, where there's a dashboard then that the authorities can look at and then, you know, contact people and create avenues for those people to get tested. So really just using technology to help the efforts move a lot better. Because unfortunately, we're in a very low tech environment, and, you know, even worse so in our government, where people are not familiar with technology. And so a lot of the processes that are being used at the moment are quite manual, and they can be quite slow and painstaking.
I mean, great work that you and your team are doing, and honestly, we really want to say thank you to, I mean, use the opportunity to say thank you to all the health workers, and I mean, you guys are doing a lot of work, and I mean, we see that the health tech companies, I mean, have been really called up in this moment, and for me, I mean, from outside, I see that the need for us to really take up technology, especially in our health sector, is very, very important. And I mean, that has been brought to the fore. So do you think that the pandemic has accelerated that adoption, you know, especially in the health sector? I mean, are we really moving at the pace that we need to be at?
Well, we're not moving at the pace that we need to be moving at, but we're moving somewhat in the right direction. I think certainly the pandemic has brought healthcare and the importance of health technology to the fore. I think the challenge is that, you know, we have a lot of legacy issues that are just humongous. But even for health tech companies ourselves, a lot of us were not sufficiently even capitalized to be able to take advantage of a lot of these opportunities. Okay. So if you see the companies that are really driving home this advantage are those companies that are very well capitalized. And there's only a handful of them. I think if we had far more capital and far more skilled people in the space, I think we would have actually been able to make far more progress with the opportunities that we have. You know, I think certainly, you know, there's some progress, but, you know, not fast enough and not at the scale that we needed, because we're really in a really, really difficult place. I mean, even forget COVID-19, our just usual general healthcare system was really terrible to start off with. COVID-19 has really just exacerbated that. And so I think we need far more investment in the sector and far more skills sort of working and thinking about how to make things better.
Okay, so do you think that this skills and technology can actually improve insurance, like health insurance penetration, as well as awareness? I'm talking from the point of view of you know, the financial exclusive populations, where we are trying to, the bank, we say banking the unbankables, you know. So do you think that technology is going to be the messiah?
I mean, technology is the only way. I don't see any other way that you can get, you know, over 100 million people access to healthcare, you know, in a setting where you don't have the, you know, physical resources available. You don't have the, you know, the doctors, the nurses, the healthcare providers, you don't have them available. So, I mean, the only way that equation gets balanced is if technology is in there, because, you know, you can scale that to millions of people. So there's no doubt about it that it's going to be technology based. The question is, what kind of technology do we need, and how do we pay for that technology? With insurance uptake, again, I think technology is going to be central, because, you know, the traditional, you know, massive cost for an insurance company just cannot be borne by, you know, the kind of users that we have that have low income and are, you know, not very well off. So, you know, looking at how do you cover the cost, really is technology. You know, you don't have, you know, the opportunity to have, you know, huge big administrative costs, or huge big, you know, management costs, or cost to claim, those kinds of things. Like, you really have to almost be close to zero, and the way you get to that is really just technology. So I don't see any other way beyond technology.
Okay, so you mentioned claims management, and I'm going to relate this to the cashback policy that you currently have. So from what I read for what I found out, I realized that you Wella actually sorts out people like expenses, medical expenses up to a particular limit. Like, how do you manage this? So is it Wella Health that's responsible for the claims management, or Wella Health in partnership with an insurance company or an HMO?
Yeah, so part of the value that we bring, right, to an insurance company, and this is the importance of insurers working with insurtechs. And so, there's always that, back and forth and a bit of a fight between, where do insurtechs sit compared to insurance companies? Mm. What's that relationship like? Mm. And the reality is that insurance companies traditionally are not set up in a way that they can reduce the cost for managing a lot of things, mm. right? One of the things is claims, for example. I mean, as a startup, we are very, we can build technology very quickly. We can scale up a lot of our support and services very quickly,
yeah.
In a way that a traditional insurer really cannot do that, And so the advantage that we bring then is that, the insurer doesn't have to, spend extra resources on retooling themselves for a micro product. What they can do is just work with an insurtech company who is set up specifically for managing that micro product.
Mm.
And then we, insurtechs can, sort out that whole process. And then once we have it all, nicely, and efficiently done and itemized or listed or presented in a way anyway that the insurance company can take it in and very quickly then just make those decisions. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we do, right? So that we are able to work with the hospitals and the pharmacies to mm-hmm. verify that this person actually came, they actually made this payment, these things actually happened, and then we can then say to the insurance company, oh, here, this is what we've been able to verify that this has happened, and then they're happy to pay that off. Because the way that we do it ourselves is not by hiring hundreds of people, but it's by using technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
That we give all these providers technology,
mm-hmm.
To be able to verify things. We have some systems in place that are able to check some things and to make sure that everything is in order and then pass it on. So I think that's really the value that we bring here, is that we can do things at a much less cost than what you're able to do traditionally.
It's interesting that you mentioned, still speaking about claim, like you mentioned before, you didn't start off thinking that you're going to be an insurtech company, right? And so I'm hearing you now speaking about claims, speaking about claims ratio, and like, okay, now this is a professional here. And looking at the fact that insurance generally now, there's this thing around claims payment, right? And one of the major questions that the insurance company who, might today will be considering some insurtechs, what will first come to their mind is claims, right? How do we manage the claims? How, especially looking at fraudulent claims.
Fraud. I knew fraud was going to come up even before you finish your question. the challenge with traditional insurers is that's the first thing they think about,
yeah.
Fraud.
Yeah.
And I think that's the worst kind of way to think about insurance,
mm-hmm.
Especially in a market where there's under-penetration of insurance.
Okay.
Like, you cannot think that, fraud is the first thing that comes on your
mm-hmm.
mind. Like, I think that is exactly why insurance uptake has been low.
Okay.
Because when somebody claims, the first thing you think of is, could it be fraud? Like, that cannot, you cannot grow with that kind of a mindset. I think the mindset has to be, especially initially, you're trying to promote adoption.
Yeah.
So really, you should actually be trying to promote fraud, if you like, because there is no way people can experience and understand insurance if you're not paying out claims.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm.
So if you're treating every potential claim as, every claim as a potential fraud, then you have the wrong mindset.
Mm.
I think the mindset has to be, we will pay every claim,
mm.
and then once we have the data, we can then understand and figure out and filter out what is fraudulent.
Mm.
Okay, so I'm thinking that this fraudulent perception came from, I wouldn't say, before the whole adoption of insurance in Nigeria, or some of the studies that we've done with the UK. So it's more or less like insurance is, you can actually use insurance to gamble. You can use insurance, for insurance policy itself, you're not supposed to make any profits.
Profit,
it's just supposed to indemnify you, like take you to a position before the loss. Yeah. So now coming to a point where you know that there are certain times that people would ordinarily use this kind of policies to gamble, for instance, too. So all of those conservativeness, all of those risk management policies are already in place by a typical insurance company, because you're seeing from the perception that my customer should only be indemnified and not exactly make profit off this particular policy. So I think it's probably stemming from that point of view that if I'm going to be a risk manager, I also need to manage my own internal risk, because I don't want to be exposed to a point where after I'd paid up fraudulent claims, my books are now, you know, they're going bad and I probably have to go under as an insurance company. Mind you, the premium is
but you don't have any customers. That's the problem. You don't have customers. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but you don't have customers. Like, that's the truth. Let's be honest with ourselves. You have over 100 million people that are not insured. Then where is the fraud? Like, you don't have a customer. That's gonna talk about fraud. Let's talk of customer first. Let's talk of fulfilling the customer need. And then once we do that, you can now say, okay, let's come back to do fraud. Because actually, a lot of times, your customers will police this thing once they know that you're genuine and you pay out claims.
Yeah. Yeah.
If the first question a customer gets is, oh, is it fraudulent? Then they say, you people are not ready.
Yeah.
But I gave you my money genuinely and openly, and now I come to claim and you're telling me it's fraudulent. You know?
There's
a mistrust. There's a huge mistrust there in a market where we don't have insurance penetration. Like, what is 2%, right? That we're seeing. So where's the fraud? There's no fraud. We have not penetrated anywhere to talk about fraud. That's my big reservation with the way insurers think in Nigeria.
Okay, yeah. So it's going to be quite interesting. I mean, your response to this now, because I want to hear what has been the perception from your customers, right? I mean, I've seen testimonials on your website now, but what has been the perception in terms of, I mean, how that has translated affected your business?
Yeah, no, people can't believe it. I mean, one of the biggest problems we had when we launched is people say, so now I go chop my money and I go run, come out. I'm not giving you any money. So people don't, there's zero trust, you know, and again, which is why I said I come from this from a different point of view. I mean, I was never an insurer, you know, and so, you know, selling insurance is very new to me. And it was very clear that there was a mismatch between, you know, what the insurers wanted and what the customers wanted. And so there's a big mistrust there, and we're never going to have the penetration that we need without solving for that trust. And so people just didn't trust us. They felt that, you know, we're going to take their money and run away, and we wouldn't serve them when they needed our service. And so our attitude then had to be, well, we cannot have too many rules here, you know.
Okay.
We cannot have too many rules. We have to be very flexible and relaxed, and we need to be paying claims, we need to be serving people, we need to be ensuring people experience our service. Like, that's the only way. I don't see any way past this. And so initially it was very difficult, but as people started to, you know, experience, you can see there's testimonials now on our website. You can see, in fact, when some people on social media try and say bad things about us, people actually, some of our customers go and defend us, right? Because they say, no, you can't say that about Wella Health. I've used them, they're excellent. Like, that's the kind of thing that insurance companies need, you know. So I think that's really the benefit, that's the place we've learned a lot, is that your attitude needs to be, we're going to pay claims, we're going to serve people, full stop. That's the way we have to be, until such time as we have, you know, enough of the market, and then we can go back and say, okay, you know, how can we improve this process? Now, remember, with microinsurance products, you have to price them appropriately.
Yeah.
So what a lot of people do, if you look at the research for these products, is that they price in fraud, right?
Okay.
And so you have to be willing to take some of that in, and also you have to cap your exposure, right?
Yeah.
You know, your exposure is not unlimited, right? You have a very limited exposure. And so you cap it, right? And so, for example, for, you know, some hospital cash plans, the maximum you can ever make from it is, you know, 20,000 naira, you know, 50,000 naira, 100,000 naira. Your exposure is capped. You know, it's capped. So even if somebody was going to be fraudulent, like, the exposure is capped. So I think there's ways around how you design the product so that you can be very free with actually wanting to pay claims.
I mean, from your experience so far working with insurers, working in the insurance space generally, so apart from some things that we have mentioned, so what are some of the other challenges that you think that the industry is facing, and you think that insurtechs and technology generally, innovation, can really help to change?
Yeah, so I mean, there's not enough innovation. You know, insurers are very slow, they're very traditional, they're very afraid, you know, this whole fraud and risk, that's the way they're thinking. And I think that for as long as insurers continue to think that way, insurance penetration will be very low. I think insurers need to, they need to take off their suits and get out of their air-conditioned office, get into the streets, get into the market, talk to people, and just look to serve them. I think once that's the attitude, is that we exist to serve people, then you see things start to change. I mean, I think it's promising. There's a couple of insurers that are starting to think this way. And I think there's a lot of promise in the space, but not enough insurers are thinking this way. I think insurers really need to get in the shoes of their customers, understand them a lot, and then look to serve those people. So be very agile. I mean, obviously, you know, the regulator has some places to play here. I come from a startup background, so I launch products. You know, the moment I think about a product, I launch it. I don't care.
Good to market, yeah.
You know, whereas whereas an insurer has to think about what does the regulator think, well, how does this, you know. So there's obviously some challenges there. But I think, you know, once that thinking changes in the insurers themselves, that can even go upstream to the regulator, because the regulator exists to promote insurance adoption. Right. I mean, that's my thinking and feeling. Like, why do we have a regulator? It's well so that insurance can be adopted. And so I think when the insurers start to embody this, you know, customer centricity, then they can take that back to the regulator. And the regulator themselves can see that, oh, you know, actually I'm blocking the insurers from being more customer centric. You know, let me be more flexible, let me improve things so that, you know, insurance adoption goes on. I think this conservativeness, this always thinking about risk and fraud is not gonna get us anywhere.
But it's interesting you mentioned where you say insurers should get up on the street and meet the customer. I noticed that on your website, at least, I mean, there are a lot of mentions of WhatsApp, right? So there are mentions of people send us a message on WhatsApp. You know, I wanted to hear your thoughts about this. That is the future we are pushing for? Whether in health, whether in the insurance sector, agric, is it going to be powered by mobile? Is it going to be powered by these services, this country, industry is going to meet the customer where they are comfortable?
Well, I mean, it's the only way. You know, if you want to serve somebody, you have to go where they're at and use what they are comfortable using. So if somebody, you know, likes using WhatsApp, then you use WhatsApp. Your customer tells you what you use. You don't tell them what you use. And that's the challenge with insurance companies that I find, is the claiming is a big headache, you know.
Very big.
I have to bring this certificate, bring that affidavit, you know, bring the right eyeball of a male goat. You know, it's just like you're trying to mix up a concussion. So people just get tired and fatigued. You've gone through a loss. You don't want to be looking for 20 things to claim, you know? Can an insurance company, I heard of an insurance company in Asia. I think a lot of the insurers in Asia are far more progressive and, you know, thinking a lot more laterally. I heard of an insurance company in Asia who, even before the loss was reported, they had already paid out because they could independently verify that the loss had taken place.
Okay, you know? So when you don't have data, how do you manage that? Like, okay, there's data in the area, but where you're going to have
But that's the goal. That's what I mean by insurers are not thinking laterally. Because if you can independently verify a loss, why are you waiting for a customer to reach out to you? You know, I mean, you know they've experienced a loss and you insure that person or that company or whatever, you should actively go out and pay that loss. For example, I mean, I work with the Association of Community Pharmacists in Nigeria, and one of their executive officers was murdered. And it was on the news, it was a prominent thing. And I mean, I've been talking to them about, you know, couple of things, and it was apparent that they were looking to make a claim. They've got a group life policy, and they were looking to make a claim for this person that was murdered. I mean, that should be instant. You know, like that shouldn't take more than 5 minutes, because it's on the news, everybody knows it was an armed robbery. You know, it was clear that, you know, a loss had been suffered. But there's a big long process of claims and all that stuff. Like, that's not a pleasurable experience. Nobody wants to go through that.
Yeah.
So you can imagine if an insurance company comes along that is able to independently verify things and just pay. Like, that's going to be so, like, 10 times better than everything else. And you can imagine what the adoption will be like. Because your customers will be like, ah, no, if not that insurance company, they will pay you straight away. Go, 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 pay your premium. Go, go, go. You know, the way insurance adoption will go is word of mouth. All this marketing that you are doing is actually a waste of time. You know, I mean, it's not, but you get what I mean. Yeah. How insurance gets adopted is by word of mouth. And how word of mouth goes happens is by, you know, great customer experience and serving the customer.
I mean, very, very, very well said there. And so let's go into, so back to Wella Health proper now. So funding, right? So I know you celebrated some news recently. Can you tell us a bit about that and what the prospects are for you and your team?
Yeah, that's right. So we, you know, when Catalyst Fund portfolio, Catalyst Fund is a London-based group that invests in InsurTech that look at financial inclusion. Obviously, with COVID-19, they're particularly interested in your healthcare kind of solutions that improve financial safety and security for especially people that are, you know, low income. And so, you know, we fit very much with our thesis. And so they invested and we're working with them in a program to improve, you know, the way that we communicate to users, the way that we structure ourselves, so that we can just be more successful. And so, you know, we're learning with them and understanding with the experts that they have. And, you know, we're going to be doing and improving a lot with their help. Part of the benefit of the program, of course, is we get exposure then to a deeper roster of investors. And so our goal then is to, over the next few months, be able to, you know, close some of those investors to actually, you know, have more capital to be able to do the things that we want to do.
Okay, so what does the future exactly hold for Wella in terms of, I'm guessing that this is just not going to be like the, you know, the only project. I'm expecting to see more of, you know, insurance penetration, health penetration, and, you know, other type of health activities and services.
I mean, we're very much health focused, and that's where we started out. But coming into insurance, I find that there's a lot of opportunity in insurance, and a lot of insurers are very risk averse. And so for me as a business, you know, it's actually very good because I'm not risk averse at all. and so I think there's a lot of opportunity and there's not a lot of competition. That's the honest truth. And so I see us actually, you know, doing things in insurance beyond just healthcare. I think there's a lot of opportunity to innovate in so many areas of insurance. You know, I mean, the market is just there for the taking. And so our goal is that, you know, as we raise more capital and grow, that we can provide, you know, insurance-based supports and services outside of healthcare. Within healthcare, you know, our goal is obviously to grow and to provide more services beyond just insurance. And so I look at insurance like a tool. You know, it's like I'm building a Swiss Army knife to be able to solve this out-of-pocket payment. So one of the tools is insurance. Okay. Insurance is not the only tool, you know. And so we're working with, you know, several other things. We're looking at, you know, loans, for example. We're looking at savings. You know, we're looking at health prevention so that you don't even need to spend that much more money. So, you know, we're doing a lot of things around helping just people be better at financing their healthcare. So again, like for us, we have a lot of flexibility that we can go where we find that there's opportunity and a solution.
All right. Yeah. That's amazing. And we definitely are rooting for you guys. And it's been amazing work that you're doing. So, and fantastic conversation we've had, and I'm sure that people that are going to listen to this are definitely going to enjoy it. So thank you, Dr. Neto.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Being a non-insurer, it always shows when I go on insurance and talk to insurance people. You know, I challenge some of the assumptions that you guys have. Because you, I mean, insurers, to be honest, you guys have failed a lot, you know. So you need people like me to come and tell you the truth that you have failed and that you need to rethink so that we can provide service to the customer.
I mean, it's important that, especially for insurance, like you rightly mentioned, it's very traditional and very strict and conservative, right?
No, there's need for that.
Definitely. But there's need for that different perspective, you know, different eyes from a different point of view. You know, that's where InsurTechs come in, you know, and also entering into the industry by other professionals from maybe the banking sector, other places where there have been a lot of more adoption of technology. So bringing a fresh look and seeing how, okay, let's change the customer experience. How can we improve the penetration? How can we get people to actually take up all these things? And at the same time, providing enough value that they would come up, they'll come in by themselves, you know. So I mean, you are very right. So thank you very much once again, and we definitely will keep in touch and continue the conversation.
Thank you.
Absolutely, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, guys, welcome back to our podcast series. I'm sure you must have enjoyed the conversation with Dr. Ikpeme Neto. It was really interesting for him to, you know, you could feel the passion in all that he was saying, and the fact that he
literally shakes some tables, you know. I think we need more of that in our industry.
No, I don't think he shook the table. I think he broke them. He broke a lot of it. But it's interesting to see that people are enthused about, you know, improving or changing the style in the insurance industry. I mean, these are kind of the disruptive change we've been talking about, and it's really nice to see that somebody is really excited to be a part of that development.
That's true. I mean, it was I've been quite interested in how they're using insurance, you know, to, you know, provide healthcare to Nigerians. So, you know, listening to this conversation about how they are providing not just any insurance, but malaria insurance, you know, that's so specific, right? And it's specific and it's cheap. Right, so it's quite interesting how that would grow, because one other thing that's really interesting for me is that they are providing a solution for a life problem. Right, we are struggling with malaria, and as much as it's a common, we can say it's a common, you know, ailment where you have malaria, okay, you can go to the pharmacy and just get drugs. You know, at the end of the day, doing all of that, you know, might not be to your own benefit, right? I mean, like he mentioned, you know, there's importance in actually getting tested to know, do you actually have malaria? Are you sure it's malaria? You know, and, you know, it was quite interesting when he mentioned that, you know, malaria, when you look at malaria symptoms and the COVID-19, they're quite similar, right? So getting tested, you know, for malaria, really, and, you know, quite innovative with the, you know, using the rapid test kits and likes, and, you know, so it's a live issue that we are struggling with, malaria, right? And
you know, malaria is one of in Africa and in Nigeria as well. Yes. It's like one of the major problems out there.
So using insurance to tackle it is very very innovative and forward thinking, you know, and we need more innovative ideas and from InsurTechs and also from insurers, you know, as well.
And then I also like the fact that you know, they have a bit of, you know, cashback plan. I think they are still trying to tidy up that end, but it's just good to know that I still would get somebody's actually going to repay me or reimburse me for a particular amount up to a certain limit that I have spent so far, which is really good. You're just It makes the product more exciting to buy and more attractive to the audience, which is what people want out of insurance. Like, okay, if I insure this, will I get my money back? That's always the burning question. Yeah. So I think it's a good one.
And you know, it's so simple, right? It's malaria insurance. Simple as that, right? Mm-hmm. We have this thing that we struggle with right now where our products are so complicated. What is covered? What is not covered? Why not break them all down and make it so simple. Okay, malaria insurance, this is when we pay, this is when we don't pay. Simple. I'm not paying out of pocket because I've already paid for insurance at a, you know, little amount. I'm getting benefits of you know, larger amounts. So and I'm getting not just a larger amount benefit. If I was paying out of pocket, I would have paid, you know, thousands, you know, but also getting quality care. Yeah, that's the bit that is quite interesting for me, because they're able to test you. So when you have malaria, then the pharmacies that they are working with, those people can now give you the right drugs that would help you get better. So it's not just affordable, but it's also quality, which is just amazing.
And even the distribution method is really what is attractive. The fact that it is mobile, the fact that it is easily accessible, like it's digitized, and that is the future of all of this platform. I don't have to go to a clinic before I could actually access healthcare on my phone, or you know, on any of my devices. So it's really a good one. Having this interactive conversation, I'm sure that our listeners would also have their inputs to some of these things that we've talked about. And for questions and clarifications, we're easily accessible on LinkedIn and on Twitter. What you have to do is just to follow us on both platforms. Right, again, my name is Folumi, and here with
Damola. And it was a pleasure. Join us next time, and definitely we're going to be having another interesting conversation with another insurance professional, someone doing something great in the insurance industry that we need to learn from, we need to encourage, and you know, we need to be a part of. So yeah, stay tuned.
Bye.